Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today on our podcast, we have a fantastic individual here as a guest. Been looking forward to this one for a few weeks now since I learned about her background and got lots of questions. Can't wait to hear about how she got where she is now. We have Miss Delaware, Miss Mary Delaware, but Mary Mundrane Zweiacker. How are you doing today,
Very
Mary?
Good.
Did I say
great,
it right?
Great. Yeah, you did it right. Good job. Yeah, great.
Yeah, I'm going to do a dance now. So everybody calls you Mary Delaware.
Yes, because why try Mundrane Zweiacker?
That was tough, and I appreciate you talking me through it beforehand. I got it right, so I'm just going to call you Mary or Mary Delaware from now on. I'm gonna cut my wins right now before I start.
And to my knowledge, there has not been another Mary athletic trainer from Delaware before, so it just fits.
There you go, perfect. You're a trend setter. love it. So Mary. First, what we'd really like to know, because you have such a unique career in what you've done and some of your passions, we'd like to know how you got where you were, where you started, how you got to your profession, and how you found your niche doing what you do. Because we've got a couple niches that you just love to be involved with, and we kind of want to hit all of them today.
Oh, okay. So
we'll see what we can do. If not, hey, you're going to come right back and we'll do another episode.
Okie dokie. Okay. Well, I am a mutt. I consider myself a mutt because I do a little bit of everything. It's interesting because I started my undergrad career as a pre-med bio major. And I thought about being a doctor and like, okay. But I was really kind of bored. Like, not bored, but I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. You were 4 years undergrad, you're doing nothing healthcare at all. So it's funny because my dad was like, Mary, you need to find an outlet. You need to do something fun. Because I had been a three-sport athlete. I had been in every club, all this stuff. And dad's like, you need to do something because you can't just study. So I became football manager. Never did that before, but what
just
the heck?
Just because. What the heck?
Just because. Yeah. There was an opening. Sometimes it's like, okay. You know, sometimes we do things and somebody asks, I'm like, okay. Well, it was an okay moment. So I became football manager, and I had never athletic trainers before because my high school is extremely small. We had no athletic training. There was a doctor in town who would come, one doctor in town, and he would come to the football games. But other than that, that was it. So I'm watching these athletic trainers on the sidelines when I'm football manager. And I'm like, huh, they're doing what I want to do now. So I talked to the head athletic trainer. It was Pam Clad and Tina Whalegum were there. And so, do you think I could do that? And they're like, yeah, sure you can. So I wound up kind of changing my major. It was still bio pre-med, but it had like an athletic training emphasis. So that would change that course. I still got my pre-med bio degree, but now I was working with some PTs as well. And they're like, Mary, you don't really want to be a doctor, do you? I'm like, well, I thought about being a trauma surgeon. And they're like, yeah, but they're not awake. you like to actually work with people. You know, when you're doing surgery, you're not really interacting with them. You're just interacting with their bodies, but not emotional, spiritual, mental, you know, states. So I'm like, oh, true. So there's a PT named Bob Engel. He worked with us. He's like, Mary, you really need to try PT. I'm like, you know what? I think he's right, because I do like working with people. I do like explaining. I like teaching. So then I applied and I wound up getting into Emory University in Atlanta. I loved Emory. It's in the middle of a park. You can't beat that. And I'm definitely an outside person.
That's got to be beautiful then.
Oh, it is lovely. It is lovely. So I got my PT master's there at Emory, and my professors, you might not know them now, but Bob Donatelli, Bruce Greenfield, Mike Wooden, they were my instructors, but they were also had their own practice. So they had offered me a job. And since I was already an athletic trainer, they wanted to start a sports medicine program in Clayton County, Georgia. So they hired me to coordinate the sports medicine of Clayton County, Georgia, and then also be a PT. I did burns and things like that, but I've always been very nitpicky, which was good when we had cadavers, but it was really good doing burns, because back then we did a lot of debridement, but the better you were, the less painful it was. And I'm very anti-pain. And as a hand therapist, I'm very anti-pain because it's not helpful. So then I worked with them and I wound up moving to the Northeast. And there was an Olympic athletic trainer. I was already part of the Olympic system. I had applied, oh Lord, I guess in the late 80s, I guess. Yeah. And I wound up going to the Olympic Training Center for my internship in 1990 to Colorado Springs. Have you ever done that?
I wish I have, but I have not yet.
Yeah. You can, back then, the only sites that were available was Colorado Springs or Lake Placid. Now, when I was there, they were just getting ready to open Chula Vista, which is in San Diego. So there's more sites for people to go intern, because you have to intern first and then you get to do something else. Then I did the Olympic Festival. I got to work with USA Basketball and Gino Arima, because I had men and women's. So that was kind of fun.
Oh, that'd be a blast. Yeah.
It was interesting, though. It was the coaches, the female athletes worked together really well. But the male athletes sometimes would have a hard time working with each other and following the coach's plan, you know, because they were all used to doing what they wanted to do. And it was very difficult for the male coaches, I think.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Still is nowadays, I'm sure, too.
Yeah. It was funny working with USA Basketball, though, because I'd never been, I mean, I've worked college, but not with very rigid sponsorship. And so they were like, you can't wear this, you can't wear this, you can only wear this. Like, I never had to, like, been restricted to clothing types before. And I'm like, I can't wear this? I'm like, no, or you have to cover it with tape. I'm like, seriously? But yeah, so that was a big learning experience regarding that. Then came up to Delaware. In Delaware, I had always done a lot with foot and ankle, and I was already published on knee. It was interesting because I was up here for several years, and I was beginning to think that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. There was something else I was supposed to do. And I was a good athletic trainer, I was a good physical therapist, but there was something else I felt I needed to be doing. And I prayed about it, and I'm very spiritual with all that. I prayed about it, and I'm like, maybe I was supposed to be a trauma surgeon. So then I was really like, okay, that's what I need to do. But I wound up, when I had my son, and you know, you're on maternity leave for like 6 weeks. I came back from maternity leave, and I, of course, don't have a lot of patients because they were all graduated, we like to hope. So there was a therapist in middle of Delaware, and she was not a certified hand therapist, but she did hands, but she was the only one who did hands, only one. Well, one day she decided that I'm not doing this anymore. I am just locking the door. And I saw the sign. It said, I don't believe in this anymore. I'm going to open up a dry cleaner and sell vitamins.
Holy moly. That's a change.
Patients were even scheduled. So the doctors in town, because there were only two PT practices at the time, because this was a while ago, the doctors came up to the two owners and said, could somebody please take these hand patients? Because they have literally nowhere to go. And my boss is like, would you mind taking a few hands? I'm like, oh. You know, I'm like, this is not sports. I'm like, all right, well, I like crafts, but not all the time. However, I mean, I don't even think it was a week. And I thrive on the trauma patients. I thrive on educating them and the whole patient. It was less than a week. And I'm like, oh, this was where I was supposed to be. And that's how I became a hand therapist. But I've never given up anything else. I still love athletic training. I still love PT. But I wound up then going the 5 years, doing the additional training, passing the exam. And then eventually I wound up becoming an item writer for the exam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I tell people, pray about it. If you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing, pray about it. Because every door opened up. It was interesting because I'm taking the test. And before the test, I prayed. I'm like, God, if you really want me to be a therapist, I actually have to pass the test. And it was interesting because I'm a pretty smart individual, but usually I don't finish a test first because I'm going every question again. I make sure. So I'm taking this test and I'm like, I like put a little star on ones I don't know or wasn't sure of. And there were only two. And
holy mackerel.
And I'm like, crap. I'm like, wow. Okay. So I went and went through it again. And I'm like, no, I'm done. And so you had to raise your hand and the person came and he thought I needed to go to the bathroom because the proctors had to sit in your seat and cover your test while you went to the bathroom or got a snack or something. And he's like, okay, you can go to the bathroom. I'm like, no, I'm done. And he was like, oh, can't you try a little harder? I'm like, I'm actually done. And he's like, oh, well, you have a good day then. I'm like, thanks. and obviously I passed. So so I'm like, this is definitely where I was supposed to be. And I've never had that feeling again that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be, you know.
Where that's I was fantastic. To be. I love that story. That's great.
Yeah.
Just presume though. Bathroom break. Nope. That's not it.
Yeah. And what I like is that I think I combine all three every time I treat a patient. Like I feel like I've bought sports medicine to hand therapy and hand therapy to sport. Because a lot of athletic trainers are not very, they don't get a lot of training in hand. So if I have an opportunity to teach on hand, I do. And I have taught several times, I mean, many times to athletic trainers on hand. And if I make sure everyone knows that if you have a question or you need me to consult, we can do a Zoom or something because I know what it's like to not have resources. When I was in Georgia, I was the only one in the county. You know what I mean? I worked out of my trunk. I know what it was like to be the only one. And I think it's important for me to share this information. And if people need it, why would I not help them? I had a former colleague who's in Maryland now. She called me, what would I do with this? I'm like, here, this is what you do. It's just how it should be done. So even with hand therapy, I think I do a lot of sports medicine stuff. Like I do a lot with muscle energy. I do a lot with restoring muscle memory. Because if you don't, they're never going to get that motion back. So I kind of like how I treat everyone because I think it's a little circular approach.
Multidisciplinary, all in one package.
Yes.
Love it. Yeah. So with that hand therapy specialty, which that's not one you come across a lot. You'll come across this SCS, the sports. Oh, mm-hmm. You'll come around OCS a lot. CHT, certified hand specialist, or certified hand therapist.
Yep.
You don't come across that as often. I did work for a stint when I thought I was going PT right after college. Ooh. At a clinic, and we had adjacent to us because it was hospital based. We had a hand clinic and we had one CHT. And oh my God, did I get schooled daily whenever I walked in there? It was just so educational because, like you said, we learn a little bit right off the bat, but it's so complex and so complicated. And there's so much, to be honest, the hand's a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there, and you screw it up, it's noticeable.
Whenever I speak on the wrist, I actually try to tell a funny, I try to tell a funny story to put people at ease because unless there's an orthopedic surgeon on that field, you're still the expert. You really, you're still the, because a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not good enough. Yeah, you know what? Unless there's an orthopedic surgeon there, you're still the best, best chance they have. I was coaching, I coached Little League, and everyone knew I was an athletic trainer because I would, of course, treat everybody. Whatever happened to any team player, I would treat. So our kid was batting, and the other team had, you know, catcher was in the box, but he was a little too close. And I didn't know that team very well. Like, I didn't know their coaches. So usually if the coaches knew me, they'd be like, oh, Coach Mary's got it. You know, I just walk over. But these guys, I didn't know. So our kid swung, hit the catcher in the hand, and he's like, oh, right? So I go out of the dugout, and I'm slowly walking. Because I always try to give them, especially, if I didn't know them. So their coach goes over, and he has the kid take his glove off, and the kid takes his glove off, and he has a prominent ulnar styloid, right? The coach starts yelling, oh, my God, he's got a bone sticking out. And I'm like, and I immediately moved right over and said, okay, my turn. That's an ulna. Everyone has one. Because it was like, the parents were like, deer in the headlights on the fence, like,
my God, call 911. Okay. Oh,
my turn. That's an ulna. Everyone has one. And the kid was fine. So I tell the athletic trainers in the audience, unless there's an orthopedic surgeon out there, you really are the expert out there.
And that's so true. That's so true. And we just have to remember that sometimes. Yes. Love it. Love it. With this hand specialty and teaching and educating others, have you been able to dive into any special avenues with your hand background?
Special avenues. I'm not so sure, like, do I, tendon repairs or that kind of thing, but I, in terms of sports, I believe I thrive as a marching band athletic trainer.
Whoa. Marching band. So I heard this, and that's what I was alluding to. And that was one of the avenues I totally want to go down, because some people go, marching band, you got to be kidding me. Now, I can attest, because we have a really good one at our local high school that practices 7-8 hours a day. They put in more time than the football team, which would be illegal for them to practice 8 hours.
But
band gets away with it. So,
because it's considered extracurricular and not sport.
Yeah, well, you know, anyway, marching around with heavy instruments. Yeah, that's anyway. I won't get started. I'll get off the soapbox. But
I've got the same soapbox.
You get going. I want to hear about how you ended up going from AT, PT, hand specialist into band. Let's hear this. I got to hear this story.
Now, I still do football, and I'm old school football, like when we used to do helmets, like we did equipment. So when a kid comes off with this, like holding his football helmet, I'm like, give it to me. And they're like, what are you going to do? I'm like, here, give me that. And I'm popping snaps. So I'm like, yeah. Still love football, and I'm not going to stop that. So with marching band, my son, when he became a freshman in high school, Middletown High School, which is where in Delaware here at the time, our band director was Brian Enline, and he is U.S. Army band. Like, he's a teacher, but he's also U.S. Army band. Right.
Army.
Yes.
Army band.
Yep.
Okay, got
reserves,
it.
Yep. You see him in parades. You saw him in parades. Like, yes. So he, and he does, he did a great job in terms of teaching them form and work ethic and things like that. So he is very into the competitive athletic marching bands. You know, they do all the formations, they do weaving, they do while they're playing. And it didn't take me very long to realize these guys need help. Like, they need an athletic trainer, because first of all, this is probably one activity where you have fully non-athletes to athletes. You know, like Lee played baseball. He's still pretty, he was very athletic, played tennis in the spring. But you know, you have people who are not. So you have a huge broad spectrum that you have to get at least close to the same page. And even the fact that you have to work on flexibility, they have, especially the non-athletes, have no idea what stretching is, why we do that. Why is core so important? Especially if you have a heavy tuba or even a trumpet and you're trying to have this line. Not only that, when we look at bands and their image on the field, you want an elongated view so you can see different formations and what they do, right? So now you even have a weighted thing on their head. They're called like shakos and with plumes.
Oh, yes. Elongated hats. Got it.
Yeah. So it changes even your center of gravity. So they have to really work on their core. So there were so many things I saw that they needed to work on. And so going with the tubas and working with drumline. So it was fun because Mr. Enline really had never worked with an athletic trainer. So I think that was enjoyable. And I had a good time. They were amenable to what I had to say and me giving feedback. It's funny because I've seen a lot of injuries in bands. And things happen, you know, because you're trying to move instruments and people at the same time. It was another band, but I wound up having to treat someone who fractured their patella because they got caught up in a tuba and they fell and fractured their patella.
Ouch.
I had a huge facial trauma once because someone wound up falling and they wound up having had the plastics come in and reconstruct their nose and things like that. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's things, you know, things happen. So when my son wound up going to Towson, which is a university, I carried over and went over to them and was doing stuff with them. And it was really interesting because they had no idea about athletic trainers. And my first, and I remember I was in Georgia, right? So I'm in my first stint as an athletic trainer, other than being in college, but and a GA. But so I was used to heat. I was used to being, you know, back then we still didn't do what we do now. Like now with cold immersion and things like that, we've come a long way.
Oh, yes.
But I was still pretty attentive as to heat illness after being in Georgia for all that time. So the first full weekend of football at Towson, it was a 98 degree day. Ugh. And they're in uniforms that are not breathable. They're not good. You know, you're like, it's okay when it's November, but not good when it's August.
Right, right.
And even still, these marching bands, for an example, they would practice those. So let's say football, and this was it a night game or afternoon game? I'm not totally sure, but they would start at like 9 o'clock and they would rehearse and practice till about 12 or 1. Then they would go eat, put on their uniforms. Then they play and parade through the parking lots, which is fun. It was great. But then they go and do pregame if they're home, right? They do pregame and the national anthem. Then they go into the stands and they play all the stand songs until usually like 5 minutes before halftime. Then they go downstairs, they get assembled, they get ready, they go on the field, they do their halftime show. Then they have off for like usually the third quarter. The high schools do this too. Off their court, and then they play again for fourth quarter, stand songs, and then they do a post-game show.
They're just going and going and going and going.
Yeah. And so, and here, my first game with them, it's a 98 degree day. I'm like, oh dear God. So I'm like, okay, all their jackets have to come off. And I think that they were a little taken aback at first. Like, who is this person? I'm like, off. I'm like, it is too hot. Off. Anyway, so actually, they kind of listened to me, which was nice. And I was anal about hydrating. I'm going among the tubas because the poor tubas. And Towson does this thing where the tubas all go into a kneel and lay back. Full back, still playing.
Oh my goodness.
And then come back up. Almost every marching band, their tubas do something different. Like at University of Delaware, they have the leaping tubas. and they leap on the field. I mean, it's a lot. So it was funny because at Towson, I'm like, guys, are your quads like screaming? And they're like, yeah. So they had never, they didn't know how to stretch the rectus femoris. They didn't know how to stretch their quad. Anyway, so I helped with that. But it was really interesting because, it's like I said, this is my first game. I'm hydrating them. I am handing them water. I am handing them Gatorade. I'm doing whatever. So at the end of the game, the band director, Mr. Moluscus, goes, wow, we didn't have anyone pass out today. And I'm like,
today? What?
In my head, I'm like, that is my standard for success.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. You know, it was, but they didn't know, you know, what athletic trainers did. They don't know. So it was nice spending time with them. And I think they enjoyed having an athletic trainer present over time because they're like, wow, there was one football game. I sent more to the ER than the football team. I had a fractured foot. And, you know, you don't realize, but like cymbals are sharp. And one person got a laceration right across their forehead.
Oh, my God.
That had to be stitched shut from a cymbal.
I never would have thought of that, but that's true.
Mm-hmm. I've had to treat pulley issues and fingers, which that's why I say for marching band, it's the trifecta to have an athletic trainer, PT, and CHT, because I got it all. You know, they're upper extremity athletes. It's when we call all musicians upper extremity athletes, but they're lower end upper extremity athletes. So it's really is quite helpful to have the trifecta.
The complete package in one. Oh my God. That's true. So where I work, we're 5 minutes from the Rose Bowl. So the Rose Parade is huge here. We have lots of families at our school that participate in one way, shape, or form, volunteering or being on the committees. And you see some of the world's coolest marching bands go through it. But now you stop and you think as a clinician, okay, well, now you're doing all those marching. You're carrying this tuba that is so much bigger and heavier. And then you're doing what with it? Oh, my God. Yeah, the injury just got to happen nonstop.
Well, and you also, like I said, I try to be proactive. All your drumline really needs to be given steady core all through the summer because you're weighted in the front. And when you see a person with a drum and they're arching their back, oh, no. Because they're going to have problems. So you get them started right on core. Your trumpeters, they set themselves up for imbalances because if we talk about the scapular humor force couple, the scapular force couple, you know what I mean? You've got the upper trap, you've got the lower trap, you've got the serratus anterior. If you're like this for hours, you're over-recruiting the upper trap. So they start to get shoulder imbalance issues because you don't have that force couple anymore. You just have scapular elevation. So these are all things I look for that I enjoy looking for. I'm like, we can make you better. Just like our football players, just like our lacrosse players, I can help you make yourself better.
But again, they're not labeled as athletes.
Well, you know, I think a lot of band directors don't want them to be, because I will tell you that I have heard that complaint in the past that band directors don't want athletic trainers because they don't want to be limited in their practice times. Because if they start being falling under athletics, they're going to start have to follow other rules.
They got to follow real rules that take care of the people. And then we step in and go, yeah, you can't do that. You got to do this. That. You got to take care of this. I just want free reign like the football coaches did back in the 50s. That's what they're hoping for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I shouldn't say this, but well, I mean, it's okay because we're medical, but I carry a body bag in my car for cold immersion.
That's smart. That's good stellar. Use. As long and as you're not zipping it up afterwards. So
easy
you know.
For me to travel with versus, you know, like an immersion tub. I can't do
that. Yes. We have one. What do we call it? We call it the taco. I don't know what it's really called.
Oh, you do the taco. Yeah, you can do the taco.
So we have one we purchased that's similar to a low-grade body bag, but I think I might call it the body bag. I like that. And yeah, you just taco them up and throw the ice and the water in, and we travel with it to games throughout the year if it's hot. And, you know, granted, although all those categories, category 1, 2, 3, for a wet bulb globe, categories came from the Georgia area. We all know that in our field. It gets damn hot out here in California. Not as humid, but it gets hot. So cold immersion sometimes is mandatory, and having access to it, got to have it. And they made it part of the law just recently, last summer. You must be prepared during football season for cold immersion at any time.
Yeah, congratulations, California. You guys have done some great things recently.
We've been very lucky in the last year. Our CATA, California Athletic Trainers Association, our representatives, our managing board, they've worked really hard at pushing topics of need. And that's really made a huge difference, I think. We had the whole wet bulb globe. We had air quality, heat immersion. They've really done such a great job. Kai, as always, a friend of mine professionally, Kai Kugler, our president, has really, really strived or made great strides for us in California over the last couple of years. So thanks, Kai.
Yeah. Now, here in Delaware, we were able to help and push legislation through our representative, which was wonderful, to provide funding for every high school to have an athletic trainer.
Really?
It's a phase-in program. So it's not every high school as yet, but it's definitely made a positive impact. And really, our DATA did a great job with that. And it wasn't, you know, one-year thing. Kelly Stafford, she started it several years ago, like 3 years ago, like really tried to push. And Kathleen Kinney and now Heather Heidel, they've been our presidents in the line. And it was our issue. We wanted it, tried to get it through, and with a lot of work, and really the association stepped up. So really, people need to realize that one person can't do it. It didn't take one person to pass this legislation. It took a bunch of people. And you have to all join in, because if you don't, we just don't have the voice. We need the voice to get these things passed. So you can't just leave it on your elected president or board. It can't do it alone. So
true. That's why you got to volunteer, no matter what level, no matter what committee, no matter if it's a state, region, national, whatever. Get out there and help push our profession into the next realm. Whatever that realm is for your state, we got title protection this year. Woohoo! I keep going back to that. We got to win. We'll take it.
That was a big win for you guys.
It's a start. Oh,
and congratulations. You got the Dr. Arnheim Award.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah, that was unexpected. And to have my name associated with him is humbling.
Oh, yes. My first textbook was Arnheim and Kleffs.
Yes. Yes. I actually, that was my first book. And when I sat for the boards, and I haven't said this yet, my wife actually bought me a new copy, because I was one of those poor kids in college, sat there trying to just get enough money selling my books back to get gas to drive home. So I had the book, but I had to sell it so I could get enough gas to drive home. So as I was studying for my boards, my wife, then my girlfriend, actually purchased the book for me. And that was one of the reasons I feel that I passed the boards when I did, was having that book again. So if you actually listen, honey, thank you. I love you. I still have that book and it sits in my office.
Nice.
Yep. Means a lot. Thank you. Thank you very much. That was unexpected today and a month ago. So.
Excellent.
I appreciate it. Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to aacitest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. You've had just such a cool and interesting career with the PT, the AT, the CHT, and bam. I mean, you know, sometimes we just literally fall into it and just kind of grow with it. How long were you active treating people in the band community, or are you still doing it?
I would like to do it again. currently I'm not at a university, so it's hard to do that. Now, I will tell you, I still cover some high school stuff. I still cover high school marching band when they have the, there's two different groups. There's TOB, tournament bands, and US bands. So I will cover their championships and things like that. I am hoping to maybe get back into a university position. I got my doctorate in healthcare curriculum planning and medical ethics a few years ago.
Ooh, and very so, cool. I like that combination. That's really cool.
Yeah, ethics. I'm also on the Delaware Licensing Board, so ethics is kind of big for me. I'm hoping that eventually I will get back into a university setting, and I will definitely jump in with both feet. But although it's interesting because we are seeing more athletic trainers covering marching bands. So that makes me very happy. I'll probably go somewhere and they already have one, but they probably wouldn't mind if I'm hanging along.
I'm sure they would like having you around.
Yeah.
Like you said, trifecta. It's nice to have a trifecta around.
Yeah. And then you and I talked about as well, scouts. Every scout group needs an athletic trainer.
They really do. I mean, you get those groups of kids together, young men and women now, and Lord only knows what's going to happen that day, let alone a weekend. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have two mottos. One, don't do anything I can't treat. And two, just because I can treat you does not mean I wish to.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. You're always, quote unquote, you are prepared, but you really rather not use that knowledge.
Yeah, no. Exactly.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I think of some of the campouts as a kid and some of the things we did and how many times we hooked ourselves out at the fishing hole and just some of the. I remember almost falling down and you'll love this. So we were on a campout up in the hills above Bakersfield, California, along the Kern River. And we decided, because we were brilliant, we were going to cross the creek because we wanted to go the other side, because a little bit further down, it had a really nice fishing area. So, you know, no big deal. We'll just carefully cross the rocks in the water. No big deal.
No.
And of course, I slip. I fall. I grab my buddy's pole, trying not to go, because we knew the fall was about 50 yards down, maybe. And I'm thinking, that's not a fall I want to make. So I grab his fishing pole. I get hooked in the process. I pull his pole apart. And my good buddy, Brad, all he screams is, "You broke my pole. You broke my pole." The whole time I'm trying not to fall down the river and over the falls. He's screaming. I've got a hook in my hand. And all he's screaming is, "You broke my brand new pole." I'll never forget that. But yeah, we need a little treatment that day. I'll never forget that one.
Yeah. These are, a flashlight tag and you hit a tree limb with your head.
Oh, yes. Never did that myself, but many friends did.
Oh, my son was one of them.
And in life, we've said before, and like we were talking off air, Boy Scouts, a lot of us that were in the Scouts, whether Boy or Girl Scouts, that's where you're first exposed to first aid, CPR, different types of healthcare, environmental health. And that kind of gets you going and gets you the taste of healthcare. I didn't realize that just a few weeks ago. That was my first exposure. Yeah, I loved it then and I still love it now.
I mean, I love scouting because it really teaches people to be resilient. It prepares you for just whatever. You never know what's going to happen. And it really prepares you for even, you know, if you lose power. I never worried about losing power. I'm like, we can start a fire.
We're good. Got it covered. Yep, we're got it covered. My wife teases me. We'll go somewhere and I'll be, well, be prepared. That's the motto. Got it. And she'll look at me. We'll get somewhere. Something will go wrong. We need, oh yeah, no, I got it. Don't worry. Got it covered. It comes from scouts. And that has carried on in my career. And I'm sure you as a scoutmaster know that as well. Things you've learned just carry on into the career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use all that. And I enjoy, so I'm an assistant scoutmaster. But I also teach it used to be the medicine merit badge. Now it's the health professions merit badge.
Oh, okay.
And it's really kind of, and not just teaching the scouts about what the different professions, but so that they're prepared when someone else in their family has a problem, they're not going to be the one panicking. They're going to be like, oh, we need to do this, this. This is why you don't hang up when you have a dispatcher on the line, you know? And so I really enjoy that. Yeah, healthcare is definitely integral in Scouts.
Couldn't agree more. And again, as we said off air, look up to the heavens. Thank Mom for pushing me to get my Eagle. Without her, wouldn't have happened. But, you know, as we said, just need the right push. And in that case, it was Mom's threat to take my car away. So, yeah.
Whatever. Once an Eagle, always an Eagle.
There you go. She was right, and she knew it, and I didn't at the time. But it got me where I needed to be. So thank you, Mom.
Excellent.
So, Mary, what are some of your, how about some favorite memories dealing with, let's first go AT, then let's talk PT, then let's talk hand therapy, and then let's talk, it's not a trifecta, it's actually a quad at this point. In band, what are some of your favorite memories of taking care or even just helping a patient or a person in need in your four specialty areas?
In terms of athletic training, gosh. Well, you know, I enjoy helping all the athletes. I just enjoy being on the field. I enjoy watching. I enjoy teaching them how to take care of themselves.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If this happens again, oh, we got to ice it. Why are we icing it? And I'm a big teacher anyway. So, you know, I'm always telling them why, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. We don't ice for more than 20 minutes because, oh, okay. All right. You know what I mean? So they don't leave it on there all night long. I think some of my favorite memories, and it's not because it was the Olympics, but when I was at the Atlanta Games in 96, the American athletes were fine. They were nice. They were respectful. But the foreign athletes were so used to not having anything that they were so appreciative.
Oh, you know, man, that's awesome.
They just, they're not used to having that. So it was really interesting because, like, the Chinese team bought an acupuncturist. We were their medical. Because if you're home, like, so I was at the Atlanta Games, whatever team doesn't bring medical, then you're their medical, which is great because I really got to work with so many different countries. And the Korean, yes, you know I'm cute. He sprained his ankle when we were there, and he sprained it before he got there. So he comes in before practice start, and I assess him, and I give him some things to do. I tape him up, and I was like, okay, you know, what time do you play tomorrow? And he's like, tell me. And I'm like, okay, come back, 45 minutes before you play tomorrow, and we'll do this all again. And he's like, and he literally like, I can come back. I'm like, yes, of course you can come back.
Oh,
you know, like,
that's
oh,
fantastic.
Yeah, that was cool. And so he wound up getting silver, I believe.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So after the medal ceremony, he came back and brought me his flowers.
Oh.
You know, like, they didn't need to do that, but they were so appreciative of everything you could do. And there was another athlete, and she wound up giving me her jersey because she was like, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. I'm like, oh, thank you. Like, they didn't need to do that, but it was really sweet that they didn't have that. And so they realized, oh my gosh, we are so lucky that we have these people here. So that was definitely...
those are some great memories right there. Thank you for sharing. That's awesome.
Yeah, they just, it's nice working with people who just are not used to it, and they realize what you do, and they're like, wow. Yeah, it's just great. It was different, of course. We had a Chinese athlete who was an alternate, and he was sick. And so illness, like, usually I'm pretty good with, oh, I can speak Spanish, I use English, and I used to speak some Russian. Chinese, not so much. So we had to get an interpreter for him. And I don't know if anyone's listening to this, who's had to deal with interpreters. But you have to, they sent us a kit the first time. And so I'm like, you know, ask, is he nauseous? And the kid says nothing to the guy. No, he's not nauseous. I'm like, no. I need you to ask him. And especially with illness, you know, I have to got to check all these things, right? And he was not, I knew he wasn't asking the kid, the athlete, anything like that I'm saying. So anyway, we got rid of him and got Mr. Chin. Mr. Chin. Mr. Chin was great and he loved us. But it was funny because one thing I definitely learned is that if you want to communicate, you will. Okay, so with the Chinese athlete, I made sure we had an interpreter for illness. But if it was, I had the Chinese ankle sprain. He came in. He didn't speak any English at all. I didn't speak Chinese. But I did a perfectly fine eval for his ankle, rehabbed him, taped him up, and he wound up winning gold. If you want to be understood, generally you can. It was really funny. This is a funny story. Because that Chinese athlete who was the alternate, who spoke no English at all, and we had the interpreter, I saw him one day in the hall. And meanwhile, he was 14 years old. So he's walking toward
just
me.
Just a baby. Oh, my God.
Yeah. He has a pack of Marlboros in his hand. Marlboros. Right? And I look at it and I went, does your mother know about this? Like, and I mean, I said it like in English, just like that. And he took the Marlboros and put them behind his back. He knew exactly what I was saying.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because that's not a banned substance. So it was kind of bizarre because we would walk into where the athletes and medical and all, we walked in the same entrance and it was like a loading dock. So you saw all these Russian and European and Chinese athletes and all these countries, they're out there chain smoking. It was like, because it's not banned. It wasn't a banned. So
it's the one thing they can do.
And one thing they can do. And I'm like, oh, dear God. We were all like, trying to walk through.
Mask, please. Yeah. Mask, please.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. In PT, like I'm trying to separate PT from hand therapy.
You can combine them if you like, if you have something you really love. Because being a CHT, you were PT, so.
Yeah. I think that one of my big strengths is I am a good teacher. And that's really, really important when we have trauma. And it's really important when we have athletes too, because so much of their life is riding on what they're doing and what their body can do. But I kind of enjoy getting these trauma patients that come to me scared. They're scared. They're terrified. And I can explain it to them. I tell them what's going on. I tell them what's good, what's not so good, but what we're going to do for that. And what you do is that you give them then the internal locus of control over their problem. Because you educate them and you teach them what they have control over, and it gives them one thing. So like if I have a trauma patient, a lot of time, you know, especially if they come from the ER or the hospital, first of all, they have no control over anything in the hospital. You don't have control of when you eat, when you go to the bathroom, nothing. So I always give them, and I learned this a long time ago, I give them my business card and it says, get out of therapy free card. They only get one. And I tell them, you only get one. But if you really feel that you can't come that day, you just can't do it. You can voucher that card and that counts. That's fine. And you know what's funny is that it just gives them enough internal locus of control that they really calm down about the whole thing. So education is really important. I love, and I teach in analogies. And it's funny, I only had one person really use that card. They wound up doing stellar, but his dad was visiting. He wanted to go fishing with his dad, which is great. I mean, that's a function anyway.
Definitely.
He called me, he calls and goes, can I turn in my get out of therapy free card? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Yep. You get one. I'm like, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to go fishing with that. I'm like, awesome. Try to use that arm when you're fishing. And he wound up doing great. Overall, he had two surgeries in my time with him. I saw him for a year, but he went back to work and has a very physical job and is probably going to retire in 2 years. So
good outcomes are always a good thing.
Yep. Always good thing.
That's what you want.
And I do love teaching in analogies. I think that's another strength of mine. I can usually take what that person does and make it into an analogy that they can understand. So like even things like, you know, an easy one is like trigger finger, because you know, trigger finger, the analogy I give them is because, you know, medically we know that the flexor tendon is sliding underneath the A1 pulley. Okay. Patients are like that. So I give them the analogy. It's just like a truck that's going under an overpass. If the overpass is 17 feet high and the truck is 16'10", you're good to go. But if someone overinflates the tires, you are now scraping the roof of the tunnel. If they really overinflate the tires, now you're stuck. And so if they do an injection, they're deflating the tires. If that doesn't work, then if they do surgery, all they're doing is making that overpass into a drawbridge. And they're like, oh.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. I love finding out what people do and make an analogy for that, whatever's going on or what I need them to learn or do. Because again, if you give a patient or an athlete that internal locus of control, they're going to be buy into their therapy more. They're going to have a more of a positive affect. And typically they will definitely do better.
That's very true because they buy in.
Yeah.
And they believe.
Yes. Even in terms of teaching about soft tissue healing constraints, we all have that athlete that has a sprained ankle and we tell them not to run at it. When they do, they go run on it and it swells like a balloon. And you're like, ah, I will talk to them about soft tissue healing constraints. We know we have the, well, four phases, but used to be three when I was, you know, first starting. But, you know, you have the hemorrhagic phase, which is the initial like bleeding, things like that. You have the inflammatory phase, the fibroblastic phase, and then you have the remodeling phase. So I tell them, this is like a sidewalk. If somebody breaks your sidewalk, you get on the phone, you call a contractor and say, I need a new sidewalk. The contractor sends a cement truck to your house, but the cement is just dumped there. It's not a sidewalk until somebody comes with a trowel and makes it a sidewalk, that remodeling phase. So then you give the analogy to them that, okay, so you have an injury. That's like somebody broke your sidewalk. The tissue releases product spans, histamines, all those chemicals that are released, tells the body we need to heal here. The body sends fibroblasts and all the things for neovascularization to the area, but it's just dumped there. It doesn't line up until you add controlled exercise to make it line up like you want it to. If you do what we, not what we tell you and like run on it, you are now the pesky kid that puts footprints in that sidewalk and we need more connective tissue, more fibroblasts, all that activity, inflammatory activity to make it a sidewalk again, but now you've just added more scar. So don't be the pesky kid that steps in the wet concrete.
I might steal that analogy because I'm sitting here thinking of my last time I had to teach that. Mike, that would work. I like this. I'm going to steal that.
I use that a lot.
Love it. Love it.
Don't be the pesky kid.
Don't be the, I teach at high school, so no comment. This is phenomenal. I don't want to take too much of your day. And I know I've got patients getting ready to come and get treated, but I've got one more question for you.
Yeah.
So if you could go back in time and give yourself a little heads up, give yourself from way back before you got into the field, a little piece of advice, what would you say? What would be that piece of advice?
I think trust yourself. Especially it's very hard, whatever these healthcare professions we're in, to trust yourself, trust your training. Those first jobs are tough, you know, and you doubt yourself. And I think that trust the fact that if you took the BOC and you passed, you have made the criteria of an athletic trainer. Now you can, and you should continue to excel and continue to expand your knowledge base. But especially when you're dealing with a parent those first few years and they're like in your face and you're like,
oof, yes.
No, I know I'm right. I know I'm right. Yeah. And I had that once where I had an athlete on the other team and they were rounding seconds and she just started screaming. And I go out there and I was a GA at the time. And I do my knee test. I'm like, I'm like, this lateral side, I'm not feeling much here. So I'm like, this is a problem. But I guess she was a bit, I don't know if she's a whiner, they felt she was a whiner or I don't know, but the coach was like, she's fine. I'm like, no, she's not. I'm like, she's fine. And they refused to help me. They refused to get her off the field it was the most bizarre experience. And I'm like, am I wrong? I in my head, I'm like, am I wrong? Because they were just so, she's fine. I'm like, no, she's not. I wound up having our team, one of my players, help get her off the field. They wouldn't help at all. I had to put her in my cart, which was a push cart at the time, to get her back to the field house. And I called her mom because I put her in a mobilizer, gave her crutches, called her mom and said, look, I'm sending her home to the school, but she's going to need to see an orthopedist. So 3 days later, I'm walking back into the field house and their van pulls up and I'm like, oh, hi, are you guys playing here today? They're like, oh, you were the athletic trainer, right? On Saturday? I'm like, yeah. She goes, here's your crutches and immobilizer back. She wound up blowing out the whole outside of her knee and they're doing surgery today. You know? But I was doubting myself the whole time because they didn't believe me. I'm like, I must be wrong. Like but I didn't. I followed through with what I knew, but I was thinking, am I wrong? Yeah. So trust yourself, trust your training. Again, unless there's an orthopedic surgeon there, you are the expert.
I love that. I love that. Believe in yourself. Believe in your knowledge. Yeah, so true. Well, gonna try this again. Mary Mundrain Zweiacker. Hey, two for two. I'd be making big money in the MLB. Thank you, Mary Delaware, for joining us today. This has been so educational and so much fun. You've got such a positive energy and vibe. This has just been a great time. So thank you so much for joining us today on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.